All right, morning, everybody. Okay. Today's daf is daf Lamed Gimel. We're back on Lamed Beis. Actually, back on the bottom of Lamed Aleph Lamed Beis. Okay, let's start the Mishnah. The Mishnah is a continuation of what we discussed yesterday. And one of the highlights of the ninth parak is the upcoming Mishnah, the upcoming Sugya. You have a year to buy back your land. You sell your piece of property, a house in Bate Arichoma in a walled city. And the Torah says, Tom Shnasa Shana, do you have till the end of the year to buy it back? If you don't buy it back at the end of the year, so you lose it forever. The purchaser now gets to keep it indefinitely. Unlike all of the properties in Eretz Yisrael that are outside Bate Arichoma, where the sale goes back to the original owner in the oval year, but over here in Bate Arichoma, that's not how it works, but rather you have a year to buy it back, at which point in time, that's it, it's done. It's out of your possession. So now you're at the final day of the year. Okay, what that year is a machlokas between the Chachamim and Rebbe. We saw yesterday the Chachamim say that a year follows the Yud Beis Chodesh, the 12 months of the lunar calendar, right? And according to Rebbe, it's 365 days. But let's assume, like the Chachamim, that it is in fact a lunar calendar. So if it's a lunar calendar, so you have now today's the 22nd day of Shvat. So if I were to sell the property today, I have till next year, 22nd day of Shvat, may ace lays from point to point. And now I'm looking. What today? Today? Well, it sounds. May ace lays usually makes it sound like it has to be.
So it's an extra day, basically.
Basically, it sounds that way. So now you come. You come there and you're looking now for the guy who bought it from you. You're looking for the buyer. And you can't find him. And now, why can't you find him? So one possibility is because he's hiding. He'd prefer not to see you right now because he understands the consequences of him finding you. Because he finds you, now you're going to buy it back from him. But he can't find you. So Berishona, so this is a Mishnah now, Mishnah on the bottom of Lamed Alpha. Berishona, you Nitman, Yom Shemasar Chodesh, Kadesh Yechalolo. So the Berishon originally, the idea was that you're going to hide for 12 on the day of the 12th month, so that now the house will become indefinitely yours. It's a move. Hitkin hilosh yecholish ma'usav lelishka v'yishover es adeles. I hear you. I do hear you. It's a good point. Eshi yecholish ma'usav lelishka v'yishover es adeles v'nichnas. And so, Hillel made the following takana. Takana Hillel is that you deposit the money in the lishka. Now, usually when the Mishnah says the word lishka, first of all, a couple of strange things. First of all, the word cholesh. You don't see that word that often. Right? Chalisha usually means to weaken. Right? Chalisha is hadas. So the word cholesh, Rashi struggles. Rashi quotes the pasuk in Yishayahu. Right? Matilin chalashin ala kadashin. Okay, Gemara and Shabbos. So anyway, you take money and you deposit it in a lishka. Lishka usually indicates.
What means to deposit here?
Well, I'll explain what it means in just a second. Lishka usually is in the Beis Hamikdash, meaning we're going to get to Midos in a couple of months from now, and you'll see all those chambers around the Beis Hamikdash. It sounds like you got to run the money over to the Beis Hamikdash. Why that necessarily has to be, I'm not quite clear. There were vaults, there were chambers. Okay, so that's the language of Chalosh and the language of Lishka is a little bit strange. But anyway, the point is that you'll pay. But he's not there because he's hiding from you. It's okay. So you'll deposit the money in some sort of chamber. V'yishover es hadeles, and you break down the door. And v'nichnas, and you walk in, meaning you'll reclaim your house. Okay. Now, in transaction law, right? The Gemara is going to discuss this point. It's an important point to realize. In laws of transaction, that's not how a kinyan works. Meaning, kinyan works where there's got to be a buyer and there's got to be a seller. In this case, it's the seller who would like to buy back what he sold. So the seller is looking for the buyer, saying, okay, let's have it. So usually in the world of transaction, you need a buyer and a seller. In this case, a seller and a buyer. And because everyone's running away from one another, right? Or I should say rather, the buyer's running away from the seller. So As a result of that, now you don't have the means of making a transaction because you need two participants, two willing participants in every transaction, and you don't have that over here. So that's why Hillel comes along and says, good, I know you don't have that over here, but I'm making the following takana. And the takana allows a person to give money to nobody, just simply deposit in the chamber, and you reacquire it. Whatever, apparently, presumably, whatever the cost of it was, whatever he sold it for was. So that's, from yesterday's daf, I would suggest that that's correct, simply because yesterday we talked about how it's really principal, and the use of the house is interest. So, ostensibly, that's what we're talking about.
There's no depreciation? I mean, the house is in bad, the worst condition?
Right, I understand. Okay, those are fair points. I'm not sure. V'nichnas emasai shiirtze halaz yavov v'yitolz ma'osav. And now, the person, meaning the guy who was hiding from you, so now he loses a house, and whenever he wants, he'll come and he'll take the money, and okay, but the kinyan is done. All right. Before we go on... That's exactly where I'm going. So before we go on into the Gemara, so let's just make the following realization. Okay? Hillel had to make a takana, and because people were hiding and ducking during that last day. So Hillel made a takana. Now Hillel lived when? So Hillel lived during the Second Temple, right? You follow your Mishnayos and Perkei Avos, so you know your progression well. Right, Shimon HaTzadik, Mishayari, Knesset HaGadola, the first major Talmid Chacham of the Second Temple was Shimon, well, I guess it's Ezra HaSofer, okay, but of the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, then came Shimon HaTzadik, and then comes the Zugos, the five pairs of Talmid Chachamim, right, and you go along in the Mishnah and Perkei Avos until you get to the fifth Zug, the fifth pair, and that is Hillel v'Shammai. Hillel and Shammai land us right in the middle of Bayi Sheni, even a little bit towards the end. Hillel and Shammai lived after the story of Hanukkah, right, which was about 200 years before the Chorban. So Hillel and Shammai are now moving along in history towards the end of the Second Temple. Good. Good? No, not good. Terrible. Meaning, not terrible, but I'm saying, how does that work out? Because that would mean then that we're talking about Yovel Halachas, because Bat Erichoma is only contingent on Yovel. We're talking about Yovel Halachas now during the Second Temple. Now, we had this discussion earlier in Masechta Erechin, and we're going to have it again right now, which is, did they have Yovel during the Second Temple? Now, lest I tell you that this is not going to be the first time this morning we're going to discuss it. The Gemara is going to discuss it again later this morning. But just a simple awareness and a simple realization, if Hillel's making a takana on behalf of Yovel, there must have been Yovel. Okay, but here's the problem, and this is what Tosfos is going to struggle with. Wait a second. One of the prerequisites of Yovel is you need Jewish people living in Israel. And not only that, but you need representation from all 12 tribes living in Israel. Not only that, the Gemara later on will say, not only do you need representation, you need everyone to, you need places everybody. You know how they were before the play, they say places everybody? So in Israel, you need places, meaning This shevet has to be in its right location, and this shevet has to be in its right location. And if everyone's me'urav, so then you don't have the prerequisite for Yovel. So in other words, what's going on over here? Hillel's making a takana for a halacha that's contingent on Yovel, but it doesn't seem that they had the prerequisites for Yovel. Good. So my question? No. Tosus's question. Bottom Tosfos on this Amud, which spills over to the next Tosfos, Hachamashma Dibiyame Hillel Shaya Bebe Sheni Kedamina Beber Kamaz Shabbos Hillel V'Shimon V'Gamliel V'Shimon Nahagu Nisio Sam Lifnei Abayis Mea Shana Hayuno Hagin Yovel Kevin Debate Arichoma Hayanoi Kedamra Bepirkin Delel Dein Bate Arichoma Elabiz Masha Yovel Noig. So in other words, so just Tosfos puts all the information, all the pieces of information that I laid out for you. So Tosfos puts that on the table. Okay, Hillel lived during the Second Temple. And Bat Yerichom is contingent on Yovel. And so there, and Hillel is making a takana for Bat Yerichom. Therefore, Yovel must have been during the Second Temple. The Kashla Perish Rashi to prepare Kashlach did not Hillel Tikin Prusbo, Uparch Begamara Allah, Mi Ikamida Daraisa Mishamta Vihitkin Hillel, Delotisham and Mishan Bishvis, Bethan Zed Rabbanan, Uperish Rashi, Vihil Karebi Sphere, Lay the Amishvis, Lashmatas Mitzvah Bezman Zed Rabbanan, the Afagav, the Hillel by Shane Hava, Sphere Lay the Babai Shane Hova, Lohaya Yovel, Noheg, Lohaya Noik Shmita Midaraisa. Now there's a Rashi in the Gemara in Gittin, which Tosfos here quotes, and Rashi says there was no Yovel during the Second Temple, which fits into that Gemara over there in Gittin, right? I sped through it, right? I you know, but just for now, just for the sake of our discussion, it fits in that Gemara over there, but it doesn't fit in our Gemara over here. So Tosus really struggles with this question of, was there Yovel during the second year or not? Now, skip a little bit into Osfos. V'tzarech lomar, I'm dropping down to right alongside the Shita Mekubetzes. The first word in the line is Alma. Tzarech lomar dalkar chutnei nachinami denagu Yovlos bevayisheni. So Tosfos makes an assertion over here, I think, says Tosfos, that there was Yovel during the Second Temple. Okay. Now, it is true, says Tosfos, meaning, I'll start off with the assertion that there was Yovel during the Second Temple. Problem is, you only had a small representative population of Jews living in Israel when Ezra comes back up from the diaspora to build the Second Temple. Right, somewhere in the 40s. Right, and it was just a small sample size. So Tosfos says, what I'm going to assert, okay, and it's a chiddush, is that even though it was a small sample size, it was a representative sample size, which, I don't know who speaks statistics over here, means that it was like a mini Israel. I mean, right, anyone visit like mini Israel over there in, where is it? It's right, yeah, it's right next to the Latrun. So it was like mini Israel. It was the, you know, so you didn't have, obviously, all of Shevet Dan, but you had a sampling of Shevet Dan. And you had, right, each Shevet had a little sample, a little representative of coming back together with Ezra. And that satisfies the requirement. It's a big chiddush. It satisfies the requirement of Kol Yoshve Aleha. Here we are, the Jewish people, even though it really is only a mini Jewish people, but still Jewish people. And then what about the Gemara in Gittin, where the Gemara in Gittin is talking about him making a takana for Prizbol, and the Gemara in Gittin over there says that only works if Shemitah is only midrabbanan, not midaraisa. From what Tosfos is asserting right now, there was Shemitah in Yovel during the Second Temple. So what's Hillel can't be metakin Prizbol, so Tosfos over here asserts that what Hillel did with Prizbol is that was for future. Meaning Hillel knew that there would be a future where the Jewish people could use institute a Prizbol, because Shemitah would only be the Rabbanan, not the Raisa. So the Prizbol of Hillel, that Hillel instituted over there, is for the future.
It also assumes that the last 10 tribes were...
Correct. Correct, but that's an assumption which we discussed earlier in the Masechta is supportable, because the Gemara said earlier that Yeshayahu brought back some of the lost tribes. So there was a period during the First Temple where they lost it, but then they regained it. At least that's what the Gemara earlier said. Not everyone agreed to that, but that's at least it's a defendable position. First point that we get from the Mishnah is that, again, according to Tosfos, there was a Yovel during Bayit Sheni. Okay. Now, to our Gemara. Our Gemara makes the following observation. Okay. You know what we learn out from the Tekan of Hillel? Something very interesting. What's happening in the Tekan of Hillel? Meaning the seller's looking for the buyer because the seller wants to repurchase his house. Buyer's not around. Hillel says, you know what you can do? You can deposit the money. Basically force the money down his throat. He doesn't want it, obviously. He's hiding from you. You could force the money down his throat. This is what we're going to call a nesina bal karcha. It's a gift. It's a give, not a gift. But it's a giving, it's an acquisition that's done against the will of the other participant. And Hillel says that it works. Okay. So Rava says, if we're gonna think about it and we're gonna try to apply it to another area of halacha, here's how it would look. Let's not use me as an example. The guy says to a girl, this is your get on the condition that you give me $200. Okay. We would call that here in America extortion. Okay. That's, you know, not the name call, but that's pretty much what it would be. Fine. So, not condoning. In fact, I'd be more on the side of condemnation. But still, this is his condition for the get. V'nasna lo midato migareshes, balkarcho enu migareshes. So if she gives him the money and she accepts the money, okay, fine. Meaning that was part...
He has to accept it, though,
right? So that's part of the condition. Meaning part of the condition is that I accept $200 from you, so he has to accept it. But what if she gives him money and he says, nah, I don't want it? Okay, now I know that he made the get contingent on the giving of the money, but clearly the person to begin with was not a nice individual. So it's not shocking now that he says to her, no, I don't want the money. So now it comes out, based on what the Mishnah just taught us, that that is not going to be good. Meaning Hillel had to make a special takana so that it would work in the case of Yovel and the case of Bati Arichoma. But the default position, obviously, is that normally will not work. Mide itzrich le, the Gemara makes exactly this point right now on the top of Lamed Beis Amid Aleph. Mide itzrich le lehillel tkunin nesina bakarcha havin nesina haba amin nesina bakarcha lo havin nesina. So you see that because he had made a special takana in the case of Bati Arichoma that it works, so that means that the normal default position is it does not work. Now, when we think about it, I mean, that makes total sense. Because every acquisition, every transaction needs both compliant parties. So the truth of the matter is that I understand the Gemara is using our Mishnah as a launching pad to make this point, but the truth of the matter is even without the Mishnah, it is very mistaber. It's very logical. Now, Maskev la Rav Papa v'itema Rav Ashi v'dilma ki yitzrech le'lehil et kunish l'abafanav. Abafanav b'im b'data b'im b'karcho havi matana. Now, the Gemara makes one last point over here, which is maybe the case of Hillel is a little bit different. Because maybe in the case of Hillel, what Hillel was misaking is that not only does it works even if he's not around. He's not even in the room. And still, the gift, the forced gift, or in this case, the forced buyout, is going to be considered a buyout. But maybe if he's standing there and you give it, even if it's against his will, maybe that generally would work. Okay. Ika de Amre, Amar Rava, Mitakanaso, Shalhilo, Hare Zegitech, Amnashitin, Lamasim, Zuz, Vanasna, Be Midata, Be Bakarcha, Avinestina. Now, we're going to do this discussion again, but just we're going to reverse the discussion. We're going to start off making that distinction that we just made. Because, v'chi, yitzterech le'lehil t'kunei shalom b'fanav, b'fanav b'im edat, b'im b'karcho, havya nesina. Hillel's takana was only because he's not in the room, but if he's in the room, I don't need to make such a takana. Meaning, I'll give it to him, whether willingly or against his will. Maskev l'rapa v'yitem rev shimi barashi v'dilma b'im b'fanav b'shalom b'fanav midat, b'im b'karcho lo, v'hillel ma'idi yitzterech le'takin. Gemara says, maybe your distinction is wrong. Maybe even if he's in the room, but he's not willingly accepting it, so maybe it won't work. And the only reason why Hillel made this takana of you don't even need him in the room is because that's the takana he needed to make. Meaning because the mitzvah is that people would be ducking out. They wouldn't even be in the same room because they didn't want to confront the seller. Okay. What the Gemara has just basically told us is there is a thinking in the Gemara, which doesn't seem to be the accepted thinking, that if I give somebody a gift, bal karcho, it would work. Now again, the Gemara basically says that it's mistaber that it doesn't work, but there's an argument, the Gemara creates a line of reasoning that if I give somebody something against his will, it would work. It would work, again, as a line of reasoning. So Tosfos says that doesn't, it's hard to understand. Look at the next Tosfos on the Amud. Midyitzrich le'lehil t'kunei nesina b'karcho, havi nesina haba amud nesina b'karcho lo havi nesina. V'im tomer v'chi yitzrich le'lehil havi raya al zeh de nesina b'karcho lo havi nesina. Pshita, de'ein lo adam l'kaba matana b'karcho. Tosfos really struggles with what was the premise of this entire Gemara. Meaning, the Gemara is using a Mishnah to try to make a point, but without the Mishnah, isn't it obvious? You try to force something on me. I don't want it. We're speaking now halachically. You can't make me acquire something. What is the Gemara's entire discussion? Oh, what you see from Hillel is... What do you mean, what you see from Hillel? Even if there was no Hillel, even if there was no Takana, in the world of acquisition, don't you need two complicit parties? And
it's like it's an interim period
Right. That's very smart. So Tosos struggles. Tosos attempts to give some sort of resolution over here, but But the Rashba, he quotes over here the Rashba in the notes. It's very good. The Rashba says very much to what you're saying, meaning that when you force it, it may be somewhere in the middle between yours and his. Right. Meaning it's not his because he didn't take it, but at the same time, though, it could be that it's now out of your possession. Okay. Could be that that's where we are in this Nesina Bakarcha.
But also there's the case of the divorce. He gave her the gift.
But on condition, though. But he only gave it to him on condition, and the condition was he got to give me money.
Yeah,
okay, fine. But, again, just he's a nudnik, obviously. And, obviously. And it's a good word to know, by the way. And so if he doesn't want to accept the money, you can't force him to take the money. He needs to willingly accept the money. So again, so the Gemara was contemplating, it's a line of thinking in the Gemara, that somehow, even if he doesn't accept it, it would still work. And again, Tosfos is struggling, and we struggle. I mean, it's hard to understand what the Gemara is discussing over here. How in the world could how could a transaction work if there's no two complicit partners in the transaction? All right, so that's a big discussion. That's an excellent point. It's a big discussion. I didn't point that out yesterday. The Achronim, right, where I spoke about this on a previous occasion, the Ksos versus the Sivus, the Achronim basically talk about how to view the sale of a house in a walled city. Is it one transaction or is it two transactions? Meaning, is it when the seller says it to the buyer originally, is that like a full independent transaction? And then when he buys it back, it's another separate transaction? Or maybe it's really all one long transaction. Meaning, I'm selling you the house, but it's not right now the sale is not finalized until I don't come back a year from now. Right? Right. So and the Nesivos really fight it out in terms of how to view this sale.
But I think that if the seller wants us to buy it back, it's not a mutual transaction. He's got total veto power, and he can say, "I want this back," and that's it. There is no consent
right.
of the buyer.
Right.
Say, yeah,
May, right. Like, maybe correct. In other words, but you see, that's the funny part of the Gemara. Because you could have localized the whole discussion to over here by Bateri Choma, meaning the Torah empowers the seller
right.
to force a buyback,
right?
Right? Although Hillel seems to indicate otherwise, but there. In other words, the Torah give, and you could have localized
right.
it, but then what the Gemara did, that's what makes the Gemara so interesting. Because then the Gemara takes the halacha over here, and it says, oh, and it works in other areas of transaction as well.
What makes you think Hillel disagrees with that?
Well, that's part of what the Gemara is trying to figure out. Meaning, can I take Hillel and can I move him over now to regular transaction law? Okay, it's an interesting discussion. We continue with the Mishnah. We're in the next Mishnah of the Perek. Kol shu lifnim in achona hareka bat yarichoma chutz min asados. Rabbi Meir Omer afasados. Okay, first of all, what does it cover? Meaning this halacha bat yarichoma, where I sell it. I don't buy it back within a year. I lose it forever. Now, I keep saying the words Bate Arichoma. That means houses. Excuse me. Bate Arichoma. What about anything else in the walled city? So the Mishnah starts off with anything. Anything except for a field. Meaning a field is so far removed from what a bias is, this halacha doesn't cover a field. So what would be the status of a field in a walled city? I'm guessing maybe it would fall under the regular laws of Yovel. I mean, makes sense, but... No, in other words, a field. Just a plain field with no building, no structure on it. No. It means any other type of structure, meaning structures. Correct, presumably. Rabbi Meir Omer Afasados. Rabbi Meir says no. Even the fields as well. Beis Abanu Bechoma. What if you have a house in the wall? In other words, again, this is strictly legalese right now. But that's Mishnah and Gemara for you. Meaning, we want to know now what actually is the demarcating point of inside a walled city. So in other words, you have a house in the wall, right? Most famous house in the wall?
Rechav.
Right? The Gemara is going to quote that. So Rav Yehuda Amir, Einu Kabati Arechamer, Rav Shimon Amir, Kota Achiton Hichamastal. So Machlokas between Rav Yehuda versus Rabbi Shimon. Rav Yehuda says it's not part of the Bati Arechamer. Rabbi Shimon says it is. Because according to Rabbi Shimon, it is the outer barrier of the wall, which is really the border. And so therefore, anything interior, including the wall itself, is considered inside the walled city. Tana Rabbana, we start off with the first point of the Mishnah, Baisin Leila Bais, Manan L'Rabbos, Bate Badim, olive presses, Bate Mechatzos, bathhouses, Migdalos Vishovchim, birdhouses, Boros Shechon Ma'aros, caves, cisterns, Tamalama Asher Be'ir, anything in the city. Yachol Shani Mar Ba'afasadis, what about just a plain, flat field? Tamalama Rabbais, Divra Yehuda, Rav Yehuda says no, because it needs to be some structure. Right, it could even be a hole in the ground, but it's got to be some structure, and a field does not represent any structure whatsoever. And even a field, anything in the city. Non-fertile pieces of property. Rashi says, "Makom she'ino rei lezria ike beinahu." The besados mamish lo kama Rebbe Meir, the habais ksiv bay. In other words, if it's a field where you can plant and grow things in that field, that's considered part of the walled city, part of the structure of the walled city, and so therefore it's subject to the rules of Batei Rechama. If it's an area where I can't even plant, so it's a rocky area, so then that wouldn't work out. The Hatayan, the Gemara then quotes a Brisa, and this is not a question, which the Hatayan normally is, but this Brisa over here is a support to what we just got done saying. Chul sits a metzula. I have some sort of rock quarry, or some sort of sand lot, Reb Meir Omer Kibatim, and Reb Yehuda Omer Kisados. Machlok chin Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda. Reb Meir says it's like houses, meaning Reb Meir, same Reb Meir as our Mishnah, maintains that it would be fine. Reb Yehuda says, no, it's like a sud, it's like a field, and therefore not part of the city, vis-a-vis the halach of Bat Erichamah. Ba'is habanui b'choma. What about a house in a walled city? Meaning in the, I'm sorry, what about a house in the wall? Rav Yehuda Amar Einu Kabat Erichamah, Amar Rav Yochanan Shnei Mikrei Chadarshu. So, where's the source of this debate? That's correct, Rachav. V'taridam b'chevo be'ad ha'chalon. So after the spies hid out in the house of Rachav, two spies were sent by Yoshua, right? I guess part of his thought process is that when 12 were sent by Moshe, 2 ended up good. So he 12 spies were sent by Moshe.
Right.
Right. 2 of them ended up okay.
And the 2 spies that were Yoshua
and Kalev. Yoshua and Kalev.
He sent himself.
So no, he sent spies, but I'm saying but he only sent 2.
Oh, he's
all right, okay, fine.
The second time it wasn't him.
No, he's not. And so what they did is they hid out, they went to the city of Yericho, they hid out in the wall of the city, right, by a zona by the name of Rachav, who according to Medrash ended up marrying Yoshua, and she, after they hid out by her, so they were lowered by a rope along the window. Ki beitha b'kir ha-choma, her house is in Kir ha-choma, it's in the wall. And she is in the choma. Patrick's a little extra. So Rabbi Shimon Savar Kepasha Dekrab. If you do so, remember choma Yosheves v'lo bi'ir choma. So Rabbi Shimon says Kepasha Dekrab. So look, the pasuk says that her house is in the wall, and then the pasuk goes on to say b'choma hi Yosheves. She's in a walled city. Meaning, you don't have to be a lamdan. Just simply read the pasuk pshat. Comes out now that her house is considered part of the wall. And what is Rabbi Yehuda saying? No, Rabbi Yehuda says, Chama Yoshev is velobi your chama. No, you got to read the pasuk even more carefully. It says she's in the wall. Why not just simply say it's in the city? Meaning, because wall is not part of the city. Okay. So again, Machlokas in the Mishnah, Machlokas had to read the pasuk in Yoshua in terms of whether or not you have a house in the wall, whether it's considered part of the walled city or not part of the walled city. The Rambam follows Rabbi Yehuda. Eino kebate arechama.
It's not included.
Ir shegagusel chamasa. Now, let's say you have a city that it has a wall around it, but it's not a wall. Meaning, what is it? It is just that the outer layer of houses that are around the city create a wall, so to say, a natural wall that protects the city. But it's not a wall. It's just simply a wall made up of houses. Ir shegagusel chamasa. V'sheinu mukefes kama miyamos Yeshua benon. Or, let's say there was a wall around the city, but it was made post-Yahushua. Any city has a wall post-Yahushua, not considered a wall, the halacha of Bat Erechama.
That means there were some cities where the houses made into walls in the time of Yahushua?
Presumably.
Which was made,
and those cities were not considered walled cities. The Elohim Bate Arechama, and the Mishnah is going to give us a list. Now, as we're going to see in just a moment, the list is not going to be a comprehensive list. It's not going to include everything, but we're going to highlight certain places. The Gemara later on will discuss why is the Mishnah highlighting these particular places. First of all, Shalosh Chaser Shnei Batim Mukafetz Chamim Miyamos Yeshua Ben Nun. First of all, prerequisite. In order for it to be considered a city, meaning it can't just simply be one house surrounded by a wall, walled city. Not good. Even two houses is not going to be enough. It has to be minimum requirement in order for it to be considered a city is that it has to be three chatzeros, three courtyards, each courtyard being made up of two houses. Two times three. So we're talking now about six houses, but not just six houses. It seems like this is part of the prerequisite. There has to be six houses configured where each one of the houses are sharing a chatzer with another house. And that's going to be the minimum requirement to be called a city vis-a-vis this halacha. Kegon. And here are some examples. Katsra Hayishana Shel Tzipori. Small town, right next to the town of Tzipori. Tzipori is up north. Chakra Shel Gush Chalav. Okay, I have nothing for you on that. Yodfos Hayishana. Old Yodfos. Okay. Gamla. Gedud, Chadid, Ono, and Yerushalayim. Mishnah gives us a list of eight cities, which are walled cities from the time of Yahushua ben Nun. This is not a comprehensive list, and I can say that definitively, because then read the next three words of the Mishnah. V'chein kayotze bahen. And anything like these cities as well. So the obvious question is going to be, well, why did the Mishnah highlight these cities? Tanur Rabbanan, we start off with the Gemara. We're on the bottom of Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, and we are going to quote a Braisa. Choma velo shur iger. It has to be a wall, not shur iger. What's shur iger? What we described back in the Mishnah, meaning where the wall is created by the outer layer of houses. That's not good. Meaning it's good, but it doesn't comply to the definition of a wall. A wall has to be an independent structure outside of the houses. Saviv Pratla Tveria. Now it says Saviv, and that is going to exclude Tveria. Tveria is a city that had a wall around it from the time of Yahushua ben Nun. Here's the problem with Tveria. Tveria is right alongside the Kinneret. So, right, you've been to Tveria? A beautiful city. So, you could spend a couple days visiting everybody's grave in Tveria. Everybody. Now, the Tanaim are buried in Tveria, Amoraim are buried in Tveria, Rishonim are buried in Tveria. I mean, it's Jewish history, right there in Tveria. So, in fact, you have, right, is Rabbi Akiva buried right next to the Ramchal?
Yeah.
Right?
Why did they choose there as opposed to Arizatim in Yerushalayim?
So, you want the short answer?
Yeah.
I'll give you the short answer. So, the Gemara is in Shabbos. Okay, it'll come back to me where the Gemara is. The Gemara says that when the second temple was destroyed, so the Sanhedrin was exiled 10 different locations. It went to Usha, we just talked about that the other day, and it like jumped around all of Eretz Yisrael. Where did it finally end up? In Tveria. So, and the Gemara says elsewhere, maybe this is the Gemara in Shabbos, the Gemara says elsewhere that where's the Geula going to start? Where the Gullus ended. So that's why so many Jews, especially after the destruction of the Second Temple, so many Jews moved up north, because that's where the Sanhedrin went. Now, it only begs the next question: why did the Sanhedrin go there? I mean, they were in exile, but why did they decide to go up north? Okay, I don't know. But in other words, they went up north, they ended up in Tveria. So basically, everyone looked at Tveria as like the starting point of Geula. And that's the short answer in terms of why everyone decided to move up north.
Really?
Yeah.
This list of walled cities, this is not the same list that is in the Megillah as far as...
Okay. And, good, I was going to make that point also. The Tveria, our Gemara says that Tveria is no good. Why? Because Tveria is right next to the Kinneret. So that means that there was a wall around Tveria, but the wall did not go around all sides of Tveria, because the east side of Tveria runs right alongside the Kinneret. So it was a natural barrier, but it wasn't a wall. So our Gemara over here says in Erechin that Tveria doesn't qualify as a walled city. What about the Gemara Megillah? The Gemara Megillah also talks about Tveria, but the Gemara Megillah says, if I remember correctly, we're not sure. Meaning Tveria is, in fact, surrounded, right? Mostly by wall, a little bit by large lake. So it is considered surrounded. So what was the minhag in Tveria, right? The Gemara Megillah says they read both days. They read the Megillah both on the 14th and on the 15th. It was a suffix. So, Pratla Tveria Shiyama Chomasa. Tveria, where part of the ocean is the wall. Rabbi Lazar Rav Yossi Amar Shelo Chamafa Pishein Lo Achshav Ayelo Kodem Lachen. And Rabbi Lazar Rav Yossi says that if it currently doesn't have a wall, but it had a wall historically at the time of Yeshua Ben Nun, this city will still qualify as Bat Yerei Chama. Interesting. What he's arguing is the halacha Bat Yerei Chama doesn't actually require a wall. Meaning, as long as it had a wall at the time of Yeshua Ben Nun, it will always be grandfathered in as a walled city, even though it doesn't physically have a wall. The Eilein Bat Yerei Chama, Tana, we learned in a Braisa. The Braisa over here is going to do the same thing our Mishnah did, give a selection of cities that have walls around it. And again, it's not a comprehensive list, but it's just going to give a selection. Gamla Begala Gadur Be'evar Yardin V'chadid V'onav Yishlaim B'Yehuda. Now here, you get a little bit of better insight in terms of what the Braisa here is trying to accomplish. Because first of all, what it does is it takes Israel, subdivides it into three sections. We do this all the time. Remember the beginning of the Gemara in Gittin? Okay, we have first the northern part of Israel called the Galil. We have the southern part of Israel, which is called Yehuda. And then we have to the east, Aver HaYarden. Okay? So those are the three general areas of Israel. And what we're going to do now is we're going to cite one city in each one of these areas. Well, Gamla in the north, right? That's where they make the wine. Gedud in Aver HaYarden, over the Jordan. And three cities in Yehuda, Chadid, Ono, and Yerushalayim, in Yehuda. So my Ka'amar, but, okay, good, but still, what's going on over here? Why are we only citing these cities? Amar Rabbi, we're now on the top of Lamed Beis, Amud Beis. Amar Rabbi, Hachi Kamar, Ad Gamla B'Galil, Ad Gedud Be'Evar Yarden, V'Chadid V'Onav Yishlaim B'Yehuda. Okay, maybe what the Bryce is doing is it's giving us the limits. Meaning, it's not just citing examples, but it's telling us how far north, Gamla. How far east, Gedud. And what about Yehuda? Only three cities in Yehuda. Okay, that's one suggestion in terms of how to understand the Braisa. Rav Amar Gamla Begala Lafuki Gamla Deshar Ratzos. Gedud Be'ivar Yardim Lafuki Gedud Deshar Ratzos. Inach Delo Ika Duchusaya Lo Itzrich Lei. So, maybe the second suggestion of the Gemara, Rav's suggestion, maybe what the Braisa is doing is like this. There are more than one Gamlas in Israel. There's a Gamla up north, there's a Gamla down south. Now, you want to ask me where the Gamla down south is? I don't know. But the Gemara is saying, this is Rav's suggestion. Maybe there's more than one Gamla. So here, in a scenario where there's more than one Gamla, so the Braisa has to be clear that it has to be a walled city from the time of Yeshua ben Nun. Now, I know there's more than one Gamla, so here I have to be clear, you know, it's the Gamla up north. It's the Gedud to the east of the river, because there are other Geduds in Israel. Funny, what comes out from this explanation is, how many Yerushalayims are there? Uh-huh. Right. Based on this explanation, it sounds like there's more than one Yerushalayim. That sounds a little funny. But that's what Rav is suggesting. Now, Yerushalayim Michlat, said the Gemara, now starts off with a big discussion, really big discussion. Yerushalayim is subject to the laws of Bat Erichoma and Tzmisus. All of this affect Yerushalayim. V'atanya asar dvarim nemar Yerushalayim in Abayit Chalubo. So the Gemara in Baba Kama says that there are 10 things that are said regarding Yerushalayim. One of the 10 things is that their houses are not sold indefinitely in Yerushalayim, meaning that the halachas of Tzmisus and Chalutin simply do not apply in Yerushalayim. Rashi over here quotes, the Pasuk says, Kona osola darasava kasavalo nischalka Yerushalayim l'shvatim, Uman kamaknile, meaning Yerushalayim is simply not a owned. It's not an owned piece of property. Lahav dilba, just to give you an idea of what we mean, meaning you know how there are 50 states in this country. What's Washington D.C.? It's not a state. It's its own municipality. So Yerushalayim is not a shevet. It's its own independent municipality, not owned by any shevet. So if it's not owned by any shevet, that means it's not owned by anybody. So therefore, it's not subject to the rules of Chalutin. So why is the Mishnah and the Braisa pointing to Yerushalayim and saying, hey, this is a city that has walls from it from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun? Lamaisa, it's not going to matter. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, ki Yerushalayim de mekefes koma miyemos Yehoshua ben Nun, velo ki Yerushalayim de Yerushalayim in habayitz chalubba, velo hacha habayitz chalut bahen. So the first answer offered by Rabbi Yochanan is, you're absolutely right. Right, correct. Meaning, in the world of Bat Erichoma, Yerushalayim is not subject to the rules because nobody owns it. In terms of when did it have a wall? It had a wall from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun, meaning the Mishnah and the Braisa would like to make that clear. It had a wall from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. There are other halachas that affect a walled city, right? Notably, the reading of the Megillah. Okay, so maybe that's what's intended over here.
You heard some of the place that Yerushalayim wasn't around in the time of when land was conquered.
It was not. I mean,
it wasn't in Jerusalem. It was only established like David established Jerusalem.
I mean, he established it, but it was there. And what the Gemara now is telling us is that it not only was it there, but it had a wall around it. I mean, that's the Masoret that the Gemara is providing to us. Second suggestion: Rav Ashi Amar Lavamar Rav Yosef Trei Kodesh Havein Hachinami Trei Yerushalayim Havu. The Gemara makes another suggestion, which is, well, you know how there are two Kodeshes? There are two Yerushalayims, meaning what the Gemara alluded to earlier, the Gemara now is saying it right now. Not one Yerushalayim, two Yerushalayims. And so therefore, the Yerushalayim is not subject to the laws of Bat Erichoma. But the other Yerushalayim, I can't tell you where that is. I don't know where it is. I've never heard of it outside of the Gemara over here in Erechin. But the other Yerushalayim is subject to the laws of Bat Erichoma. Interesting. Tanya Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi lama manu chachamim eselu. Why did the chachamim choose these cities? So shekashalu b'nei agola matzu elu v'kitchem aval rishonis batlu mishabatlu kedusha sa'aretz. Okay, now we get to one of the more classic discussions that take place in Shas. You'll remember this in Megillah. It comes up now here again in Erchin, and that is, once we lost the land, and once the land was conquered, and now Ezra comes back up again, does he have to reconsecrate and re-sanctify Eretz Yisrael? Yes or no? The answer is machlokas. Okay? And so what the Gemara now is suggesting is that when Ezra comes back in, and he's pointing to those walled cities, and he says, this is a walled city, that's a walled city, that's a walled city. He's not just pointing, he's being mekadesh. He's consecrating. So the Gemara says he's of the opinion, he meaning, let's be clear about this, Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that going back to Israel for the second temple requires a reconsecration of Eretz Yisrael, because once it's destroyed, the Kedusha goes away. Viriminhu. And the Gemara now is going to point out that I'm going to create a contradiction. And look who's saying this, Braisa. Same. Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi. V'chielu b'varayu v'alo kvar nemar shishim ir kol chevel argov kol eila arim b'tzuros ela lama manu chachamim ethela. Why do we choose these? Shekashalo b'nei agol matzu eila v'kidshum. Because when they came up, they were mekadish. Kiddushum hamrina delot sarich likdushinu. What do you mean? They don't have to be mekadish them. Ela manum. But simply counted them. In the second braisa that the Gemara just quoted, the Kedusha perpetuates. It goes from Temple 1 to Temple 2, and it doesn't need a reconsecration. Wonderful. Difficult. Because Braiso number one says it does require, Braiso number two says it doesn't require. You could just simply say it's a machlokas, but that answer is not going to work because Braiso number one is authored by Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi. Braiso number two is authored by same Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi. Meaning the entire Eretz Yisrael, including Yerushalayim, including everything is not requires a new sanctification. So, one answer, not an elegant answer, but one answer is, okay, different versions of what Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi said, not just different versions, opposite versions of what he said. Maybe what we could do is take one of the statements and assign it not to Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi, but assign it to Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yossi. The Tanya, in fact, I'll show you a braisa that supports this position. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yosi Omer Asher Lo Choma Afa Pi She'ein Lo Achshav Ahaya Lo Kodem Lachein. Even if it doesn't have a wall now, as long as it had a wall, it will satisfy the requirement of Bat Yarei Choma. My time, demand, I'm sorry, period. Meaning, good. So, if it had a wall, even though it doesn't have one now, how does it have Kedusha? Because the Kedusha goes in perpetuity. Meaning, this position of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yosi is of the opinion that the Kedusha just continues. Good. My time, demand, I'm a Kedusha, return to Kishla Shait of Lo Kishla Asad Lava, Dechsev. The Gemara now is going to go over arguments. Arguments to support and both positions that either the Kedusha continues in perpetuity or the Kedusha does not continue. So first, we're going to explain the position of it does not continue. The Pasuk says, in Nechemya Vayasu B'nei Agola HaShavim and Hashvi, Sukkot vayishvu b'sukkot ki lo asu miyamei Yehoshua ben Nun. The pasuk in Nehemiah, it's a very difficult pasuk. The pasuk says that when Ezra comes back, so they celebrate this holiday, it's called Sukkot. You've heard of it. Yeah, me too. And the pasuk says, you know, the last time we celebrated Sukkot, Yehoshua.
That's a long time.
That means, you understand, Yahushua was over 400 years earlier, closer to 500 years. No, I'm sorry, let me do that again correctly. 800 years, thank you. 369 years of Shiloh, 410 years of the First Temple, 70 years of the exile. Okay, approximately 800 years earlier was Yahushua before Ezra. And the Pasuk says, you know, we haven't been sitting in Sukkah since Yahushua. 8 centuries of not sitting in Sukkah? David HaMelech? The Gemara is going to ask this question. So, Vati Simcha Gedola Ma'od Esher Ba David V'lo Asu Sukkos Ache Ba Ezra. I mean, we could point to a lot of people historically between Yehoshua and Ezra, but of course, David is known for his Sukkah. Sukkahs David. So, right? David didn't make a Sukkah? Like, I can't imagine. Ela makish b'yasam b'yimei Ezra l'b'yasam b'yimei Yehoshua. Ma b'yasam b'yimei Yehoshua manu shmitim v'yolvus v'kidshu are choma. B'yasam b'yimei Ezra manu shmitim v'yolvus v'kidshu are choma. V'yom rabbi avacha shal makech al arsa shar yishur avasecha v'yishtam mekish yirushascha l'yirushas avasecha. Ma yirushas avasecha b'chidush kol dvarim halalu. Af yirushas b'chidush kol hadvarim halalu. It's a hekesh. It's just there to tell us that when Ezra comes up, you know what it was like? It was like Yehoshua. Meaning, just like when Yehoshua comes in, he has to be Mekadesh, Ezra had to do the same thing. It's not that we haven't been doing the Mitzvah of Sukkah for 800 years. It means it was like new. Why was it like new? Because it was the same basic idea that had to be Mekadesh. V'idach. Now, if you don't agree with that position, how would you understand these psukim? The Bayrachmi al Yetzodah Vorazara Ubatle V'agen Zechuse Alayhu Ki Sukkah. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, a fascinating Gemara that talks about how we took the Yetzer Hara for our Avodah Zarah and we shechted it. Right? You ever wonder how we don't seem to be that enticed by Avodah Zarah? Other Averos get our attention. But Avodah Zarah, like you see an idol and you're not thinking, wow, I need to worship it. Right? And if you read Shoftim and you read through Navi, you'll see they loved Avodah Zarah. What, right. So what happened? So the Gemara Sanhedrin says, I'll tell you what happened. We took the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah and we did away with it. So we don't have a Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah anymore. So what about for Arayos? Remember the Gemara Sanhedrin? We tried. We went through a trial period. Right? We tried. Right? What would the world be like without a Yetzer Hara for Arayos? And the Gemara Sanhedrin tells us it didn't work. It did not take. Meaning because there'd be no procreation, there'd be no reproduction, right? There were no eggs that were being laid. Meaning, unfortunately or fortunately, I guess, you know, it can go either way, but we just can't function as a civilization without the Yetzer Hara for Arayos. So, I know this is going to sound funny, but we need that. So, we need that Yetzer Hara. But the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, okay, we could do without. I'm sure, by the way, the Gemara doesn't say this, but I'm sure that, in other words, we must have lost an equal level of Kedusha when we did away with the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah. Meaning, there has to be cause and effect. It can't just simply be that we just did away with the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah, and that's it. Meaning,
and what?
So what the Pasuk is alluding to is just like the Sukkah is a protective, is spiritually protective, so too when we came back into Eretz Yisrael to build the second temple, we did away with the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah. Kisuka behind the kakapid kra ilave di Yeshua de choduch de ksiv Yeshua v'hachak ksiv Yeshua. And in fact, you know who should have done this? Meaning, Yeshua really should have done that 800 years earlier. That's why the Torah is connecting the story of Ezra to the story of Yeshua. Ezra did away with the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah. Yeshua, you really should have done that. And in fact, again, all this in the Gemara, so interesting. And in fact, when you see the word Yeshua mentioned in Pasuk Nehemiah, it takes out the hay. It's almost like a derogatory, it's almost like pejorative, like Yeshua without the hay, meaning this is something he should have done. Okay. All right. We'll pause over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. Tomorrow for us is going to be the last day of Erechin, regardless of how far we get. I assume we'll get towards the end. Tomorrow's the last day of Erechin, and then what's today? Today's Wednesday. I got it. Tomorrow's Thursday, so that means Friday tomorrow. Wow. Rabbi Chanan ben Akash, Amar Tzigros Baruch Hu Zakhi Sol Ficha Chir Bem Torah Mitzvah Shenem Aranai Chafetz Amatikol Yagdil Torah V'Yedir.